Good morning, Bellingham Covenant Church. What a privilege it is for me to be here with you all and to say good morning to you from my home to yours, all of you watching online. For years, this church community has been a sending agency of missionaries all over the world, all over the country, and even just a few miles in either direction to the university students in Whatcom and Skagit counties. I have recently become the new director of our college ministry after the legendary, but more importantly, faithful Brady Bobbink, who many of you know, decided to reduce his role. He is not retired. Many of you know Brady and Shirley, and it's a privilege to follow Jesus in the role after Brady, and with Brady's continued support and involvement in our ministry. Some of you already know me pretty well. Janet and Mark Russell have been on my missionary support team since I first started in ministry 16 years ago. Thank you, friends. Stephen Shetterly and I also go way back to my student days. I remember my sophomore year at Western going on a service project trip with him over spring break. And he was just a great upperclassman who younger guys like me could look up to. He was funny. He liked the outdoors. And most importantly, he took his faith really seriously. And that's all still true today. And there's more people I could say hi to in this community, of course. There's many here who I've got some history with. And anyway, I should just probably stop there. But thank you so much for having me. If we haven't had a chance to meet, I would love to tell you a little bit more about myself. I was born to missionary parents. First, they were university missionaries in Minnesota. And then they were called to be missionaries at the University of Nairobi in Kenya, East Africa. So I moved there when I was 7 and spent most of my early life in Nairobi. And I graduated from high school there and came to the Pacific Northwest for college at Western. And that is where Jesus got a hold of my heart in a new way. Because a CCF intern reached out to me, discipled me, and helped me get serious about Jesus' mission to the world. And I also, at the end of my experience at Western, I did CCF's internship after I graduated from Western. And really, over the course of that intern year, the Lord called me to be a university missionary full time. So here I am. I also married a missionary. I've got a picture of our family that may be shown on the slideshow. Jessica and I have been married 15 years this September. So that's pretty exciting. She's bummed she couldn't join us this morning. So I get to represent our family. And Owen is our oldest. He's in 6th grade at Bellingham Christian. And Jack and Maya are in 4th and 2nd grade at Happy Valley Elementary, respectively. And this morning, I want to start our time in the Word by telling you a story about Maya. She's great. She actually scored a hat trick at the Northwest soccer field yesterday. I was quite proud. She looks exactly like her mom. Like somebody zapped Jessica with a shrink ray, and that's my daughter. I don't know how many of you are dads of daughters here or at home online, but when she was born, she unlocked a chamber in my heart that I didn't even know was there, called my baby girl. Right? Oh, this girl has stolen my heart. Many of you know what I'm talking about. Now, for those of you who have children, but really, for all of us who care about children, your nephews, nieces, other people's kids in this church, I wonder how many of you have ever been in a crowd and have lost track of your child. When Maya was 2 years old, that felt like every Sunday because my kids love to run. They run endlessly. And our church sanctuary is a paradise. There are aisles you can duck and dodge between. There are big, wide spaces around the front and the back where they run big loops around the room. I mean, this is a 2-year-old runner's dream. And every Sunday, I wish I had chameleon eyes that could, you know, move independent of each other because I couldn't follow all my kids around the room all the time, especially when they would go in different directions. And one Sunday morning when Maya was 2, I lost her. She was just at chair height, so when she ducked down one of the aisles, I couldn't see her. And there was a miscommunication between me and Jess. Maybe this has happened to you before at church, but it was time to leave, and I thought Jessica had Maya, and she thought I had her, and we couldn't see Maya anywhere. So, you know, at first you're calm, right? You just start walking around the church, confident that, you know, nice enough people are around, they know us, they'll find her. But then I realized that the front doors of the church were open. And there's a really busy street right outside. And Maya loves cars, and she loves watching them zoom by. Some of you parents, I can sense your heart rates rising, right? So I started to panic a little bit. I started collecting friends of mine who care about my kids too and asked them to fan out and help me find my little girl. And we could not find her. For that window of time, my Maya was lost. She was away from me. And there was a reasonable possibility that she could be hurt by not being close to me. And the longer I looked, the more scared for her I became. Sometimes I think that being a parent gives me a glimmer of what God's heart is like, at least a little bit. Because when the Lord created the world out of the goodness of his heart, he also created volitional human beings who are like him, right? His image bearers were called in Genesis. People are God's lookalikes in the world. And because we're like him, we can relate with him. We were made to be with him, to be his people, to be his family. But in Genesis chapter 3, our human choices poison the story, don't they? God's lookalikes start wandering away from the good and beautiful God and become, among other things, lost. God even asks, "Where are you?" My own heart starts pounding just remembering losing Maya that morning. That dread that something might happen to my baby girl. The increasingly wild urgency to get back to her. Now, eventually, I found her in the building. She had found a corner downstairs with some toys and was fine. However, for a good chunk of that morning, I was not a very relaxed parent. Right? Here's why I tell this story. I would suggest that this morning, God is not a very relaxed parent either. Because there are people, his image bearers, his lookalikes, his children, who are away from him. And it is likely that they will be hurt by not being close to him. Now, he certainly hasn't been, negligent or distracted. He didn't lose track of us before we knew him. But his parental heart, this passionate urgency to save those who are lost, is 1,000 times what I felt that morning for my Maya. And so the entire scriptures from Genesis 3 onward lay out God's dramatic parental pursuit, his wild hunt for his lost children, crossing every distance that lays between us. His pursuit climaxes in coming to us in the person of his son, Jesus Christ. In Mark chapter 1, we're told that Jesus goes to a synagogue in Capernaum, and he preaches, and he casts out demons, and he heals the sick. And word gets around in this little city in the region of Galilee that he's at Peter's house. So as you can imagine, everyone brings their sick to Jesus. Mark writes in chapter 1, starting verse 32, that evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons. So when you think about Jesus' mission and the movement he's trying to build, it makes a lot of sense to think that Jesus has just discovered his mission headquarters, right? Stay put and set up shop. But look at what Jesus does. The next morning, he gets up before sunrise and goes off by himself to pray. And continuing in verse 36 of Mark chapter 1, says this, "Simon Peter and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, 'Everyone's looking for you.' Jesus replied, 'Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That's why I've come.' So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons." Let's go somewhere else? Why? Everybody loves you here, Jesus. Things are working. Why would you leave this? "So I can preach elsewhere also." That's why. Jesus was not content with the positive response in Capernaum. He says so. There are more who need to hear. You might think, "Sheesh, Lord, can't you be satisfied with a little success?" But if someone had come to me that panicky Sunday morning and said, "Come on, Jeff, you've got 2 other kids. 2 out of 3 is not bad. Why can't you be content with the kids you've already found? Can you imagine what I would say to such a person? God is not content with the kids he's already found. And Jesus tells stories that illustrate this over and over again. In Luke's Gospel, chapter 15, he tells the story of a shepherd who so values every sheep in his flock that when one goes missing, he will leave the 99 to find it, to search until he finds it. He tells another story of a woman who loses a very precious coin and clears out her house. She's tossing furniture. She's turning the place upside down. And when she finds it, she throws a party. Jesus says in verse 10, "In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." One image of God, one lookalike who's found is worth a party in the life of God. Behold the urgent passion of a God who is chasing his lost kids. Now, by the way, if you're here watching this morning online and you're not sure yet what you think about Christianity, you should hear this. You need to know that God's heart for you is like a mama bear roaring to the protection of her cubs. That urgency, that fear that you might be lost, that energy bordering on rage at anyone who would get in his way before he gets to you, that's what God's heart is like for you. To find you and protect you and give you your life back, the life he's always wanted to give you. And for those of us he has found, the frantic Father heart of God has implications for our lives today. Do you think Jesus' passion for the lost fades when he wraps up his earthly ministry? Does he say, "Well, I found as many as I could, but I'm done. I'm going to the Father with as many as I could find in 3 years of ministry"? Of course not. In fact, the rescue escalates, doesn't it? He hands the responsibility on to his followers, who will pass it on to more followers, who will pass it on to their followers, all the way to you and me watching this online this morning. And that is why I am a campus missionary. I was a senior in college when the Lord showed me what he wanted my role to look like in his grander mission of saving the world. It was my last quarter of college. I was an English literature major, great major. If I had to major all over again, I'd do the same thing. And one of my last classes was a senior seminar class of like 8 or so people, small class. And a student named Michael was the smartest guy in the room by a long shot. He read extra books that weren't even on the syllabus. We were trying to get halfway through the books on the syllabus. He argued on equal footing with the professor. His opinions were well academically founded. And we were discussing morality. And Michael said, "Everything's relative. It's just a matter of historical setting. Even Hitler could be a hero if enough time passes and enough circumstances change." And I realized we graduate in a few weeks. And this guy is about to step out into the world with this worldview. He's going to treat people like this. He's going to teach people like this because he wanted to be a professor. And that's when the Lord spoke to me. I realized Michael did not come to college already thinking this. Nobody reads the stuff that he was quoting when they're in high school. This was a college-produced worldview. His college experience shaped his worldview this way. That's when the Lord said to me, "I want you to be a missionary to these people." This wild and crazy people group who paint their bodies at sporting events with boundless energy and wild, adventurous thinkers and a hunger for truth that ends up splashing out on my own soul. I wonder if any of you have college-aged kids. When I look out over our campuses, Western in particular, but also Watkins Gadget that I'm now in charge of as a director. When I look out over our campuses, I see your kids or kids just like them. And remember that our Father is not a relaxed parent when He looks at our campuses. He is sprinting to find His lost kids in every classroom, in every residence hall, in every major. And He's called me and my wife and our staff and our students and our interns to join Him in it. And you know what? He feels that way about your coworkers, about your neighbors, about your mail carriers, your family physician, and the teenager with blue hair and a spike in her nose who makes your coffee. There is no one the Lord is not racing after, because God is looking for His lost kids. And we are the search party. You and I are the friends that He's collecting in that church sanctuary to fan out and help Him find them. Thank you so much for sending me and some of my teammates to university students locally and regionally and around the world. May God stir up in you and in me and in all of us as His people this urgency for His lost kids who are all around us. May the Holy Spirit capture our hearts and press us to them to reach them for Jesus. Thanks so much for this time to share with you. God bless you and your community. You're already such a great example of the missional heart of God in the world. I'm so grateful. Have a great week.